Today we're going to talk about the reading from Jeremiah, the one in which God comes to Jeremiah and says, I have a job for you. Go do it. Have you ever had to do something you didn't want to do? Yeah, right? Like all the time, constantly. Like we don't want to do the dishes, but we do them anyway. In our house, the rule is that whomever opens the dishwasher to clean dishes has to put the dishes away. We call it the dish lottery, and if you open the dish thing and the dishes are clean, you have lost the dish lottery. A lot of the time, I'll be elsewhere in the house, and I'll hear clanking, and then Les goes, ugh! And I go, did you lose the dish lottery? And he goes, yes! But usually, one of us will come and help the other one just to help it go a little bit faster. Or, there's everybody's favorite chore, the kitty litter. Oh, yeah. We had to put it on our weekly schedule because, let's face it, no one wants to change the litter in four boxes. We have a blended cat family, four cats, so much litter. And when it wasn't on the calendar, nobody did it. We take turns, but at no point has either one of us said to the other, oh, can I do the kitty litter this week, please? It's my favorite thing. There's a term that was created by the inimitable culture of the internet for these kinds of tasks. It's called adulting. Adulting is when you do the things you know you need to do to keep your life running smoothly while internally complaining the whole time. You recognize that things need to get done, like bills and cleaning and changing the oil in your car, right? And you do them only because they're part of adulting. This is one of my favorite online comics called Hyperbole and a Half, showing what it feels like to adult. Can I have the next slide? Clean all the things. You ever do that? You look at your house and you're like, ugh, all of it? Seriously? The reality is that much of life consists of doing stuff we don't want to do when we'd really rather be sitting on the couch eating cereal or reading a book or napping. Hey, for some of you, today the alarm went off and you said, I don't want to go to church. God knows I love God. That's okay. We all feel that sometimes. It's fine. We're very glad you're here. But what happens when God calls you to do something you don't want to do? Have you ever had that happen? When God calls Jeremiah as a prophet, he is very reluctant. He even sounds a little bit afraid. And to understand why, we need to understand what exactly it was that God was asking Jeremiah to do. So Jeremiah lived during a time of serious crisis for the Jews. We know that the story of Israel is one of a special relationship between the people and God. God brings the Jews out of Egypt and makes a covenant with them. God hands down rules for living in relationship with God, the Ten Commandments, as well as the lesser rules laid out in Deuteronomy, Leviticus, and Numbers. Fascinating chapters. And in return, God gives the Israelites victory after victory over the surrounding tribes. The Israelites get their own fertile land. They multiply. They come up with a culture. They settle. And all of this comes about because they honor their agreements with God. Agreements about whom to worship, only Yahweh. Where to worship, only Jerusalem. And how to remain pure, which is dietary restrictions, etc. The Jews come to see themselves as a people directly under the protection of God. And that protection is made manifest in the land that they're given by God. That land becomes the kingdom of the Jews. Can I have the next slide, please? And it lasts for hundreds of years. Of course, we also know that kingdoms rise and fall. And the kingdom of the Israelites was no different. The Israelites' territory consisted of two sections, Israel in the north up here, and Judah in the south. And if you guys know your geography, which I'm sure you do, this little strip of land here, super contested. This is the Gaza Strip, so it's always been a very hotly contested spot. The surrounding principalities wanted that valuable land, whether or not it had been given to the Israelites by their God. And in 722 BCE, the Assyrians, from up here, gigantic empire, prevailed. Can I have the next slide, please? They installed their leaders at Samaria, right here. They took over the northern kingdom. But not only did the Assyrians annex Israel, can I have the next slide? They exiled the teachers, the priests, the merchants, all the learned people, all the leaders of the communities, and sent them off into Assyria. So not only, next slide please, were they missing their leaders, their community was fragmented. And they also imported Gentiles from other nations destabilizing the community even further. So now this land that was given by God is filled with strangers. But perhaps worst of all, next slide please, the loss of the northern kingdom constituted a blow to Jewish identity. The Jews knew they were the chosen people because God had given them that land. If the land was no longer theirs, then who were they? The fabric of their communities had been destroyed. Hundreds of years of history had been erased. Either they had failed or God had, and which is worse? So into this mix appears poor Jeremiah. He was a teenager when God spoke to him, say the historians. And he lives about 3 miles northeast of Jerusalem, right here. So right where all the craziness is happening. Not only the seat of the temple, but right next to the border. And God gives him a mission. God says, I want you to go to your own people and tell them that this is their fault. Isn't that terrible? I want you to tell them that they haven't kept up their end of the bargain and so they have lost their land. And over here to the south, the Babylonians have their eye on the southern kingdom of Judah for many years, which is still unannexed when Jeremiah is born. And God tells Jeremiah to tell his people that when the Babylonian king shows up at their gates, the Jews should not fight but surrender because God has given the Babylonians power over Judah for now. Who wants to go to their own people and deliver that kind of news? That is awful. I can just imagine Jeremiah, you want me to say what to them? They'll kill me. And he's right. One of the messages Jeremiah is asked by God to bring is that by seeking political alliances with Egypt and Assyria, yes, the same Assyria which conquered the northern kingdom, the Jewish king is selling out his own people. Speaking out against the king gets people killed all the time. Besides which, no one wants to hear that something awful is their fault. The Jewish community doesn't want to hear that the reason their relatives were kicked out of the northern kingdom, or that there are now thousands of refugees in the southern kingdom, or that they have lost their sense that God was on their side, is because they failed as God's people. This is literally the last thing they want to hear, and it's exactly what God asked Jeremiah to say. Much of our relationship with God is our relationship with meaning. When something bad happens to us, we almost always ask whether it was our fault or where God was when it happened, what God's role was. In this case, the Jews had a choice. They could interpret their downfall as the failure of their God to protect God's people against invaders, or they could interpret it as a failure of themselves to uphold their duties to God. They chose not to see themselves as victims of fate, although the route that Jeremiah's early message takes, blaming the conquered for the violence of the conquerors, tends to blame the victims more than necessary. The reason why the northern kingdom fell probably wasn't that the Jews didn't worship correctly. It was probably that the Assyrian Empire, up here, was huge and wealthy, and they wanted the land the Israelites occupied. And sure enough, during Jeremiah's lifetime, things did get worse. In 597 BC, Babylonians took Jerusalem and did the same thing the Assyrians did. Next slide. They deported hundreds of thousands of Jews and annexed Jerusalem, conquering the last of God's people. Jeremiah lived during this painful time, and God asked Jeremiah to say things that stung even worse than the conquests themselves. It's not surprising that Jeremiah protests. He says, I'm too young. They won't listen to me, which is much like what Moses said when he was called by God, saying, I stutter. No one's going to listen to me. No one cares what I have to say. God has called Jeremiah to do something far beyond his capabilities, and Jeremiah is afraid. I can't, he says. Has God ever asked you to do something you know you cannot do? It's funny how we know when God is calling us. We feel it down in here. It's a still, small voice, a kind of nagging itch that won't go away. Or maybe we feel it the way Jeremiah did, the fire shut up in our bones. But either way, when God calls us, we know it. But why does God so often call us to do things which scare us or that we just plain don't want to do? This is not adulting now. This is something else, something more important. Why does God call us to do outreach when we are shy? Why does God call us to pray with people who make us uncomfortable, like drug addicts or criminals? Why does God call us to forgive the relative who has wronged us or the friend who betrayed us? Why do we so often feel called to speak the truth in love to someone who doesn't want to hear it? Or even to speak the truth in love to ourselves? The answer is because what we're called to do is not about our strength. It's about God's. When God calls us to do things we don't want to do that scare us to death, we say, not me, God, I'm too young, I stutter, I can't write, I'm a woman, I'm dark-skinned, I don't have a PhD. Please, God, not me, anyone but me. But God says, I know you're shy. I know you've made mistakes. I know what keeps you up at night. I know you don't call your mother often enough. I know you stutter. I know all those things, but you know what else I know about you? I know your courage. I know your compassion. I know talents that you have never seen. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I know what you can do because I made you. I know you better than you do, and you can do this, for I am with you. God even touches Jeremiah's mouth and says, I have put my words in your mouth. It isn't even Jeremiah who is speaking after that. It's God. See, our ability to do what God calls us to do isn't dependent on us. If it were, we would have no need for faith. If we were able to do the impossible things God calls us to do all on our own, then we would never have the opportunity to look at the things God does through us and say, wow, thank you for working through me. Thank you for giving me exactly what I needed, unbeknownst to me, to do this crazy, scary, amazing thing that you called. God works miracles through flawed, unlikely people all throughout the Bible, so much so that one wonders whether we're meant to notice something here. Mary was an unwed mother, right? Moses stuttered. Noah got drunk. Esther was conniving. Miriam was a gossip. Jonah was a coward, and Lazarus was dead. It's true. But that's the whole point. They had greatness in them they didn't know was there. It was revealed when they said yes to God, and God went to work. They didn't need to be perfect because God is. Years ago, I was on my way to work on the N train from Queens. I'd come to New York to be a film editor, and lo and behold, what my mom said was true. I made no money doing that whatsoever. So I was stuck behind a desk, day in and day out, restocking pretzels and answering phones. I was not happy. The N flies through Queens above ground until it crosses under the East River, and it was a freezing morning in New York, and the trees were bare. I stared out the window, wondering what on earth I should do next, when out of the blue came that still small voice. Ministry, it said. I just about burst out laughing. I am not holy enough to do that. I said, I've made too many mistakes in my life. I can't study the Bible. I can't preach. I can barely pray coherently. That's just dumb. Me, a pastor. As it turns out, pastor was the only word I knew for someone who worships God professionally. Going to seminary was the best choice I have ever made. It's the best yes I ever said. I had my idea for a book that's going to be published next year in my first year at Emory because of what I was studying. In my second year, I discovered that I enjoyed preaching, and all throughout, I found that I love to care for God's people. I learned that in emergency rooms and by deathbeds during my stints as a hospital chaplain, experiences I never would have known had God not spoken to me that freezing day on the train. I met my husband in Atlanta, a city I would never have been in had God not called me to go to school there. When God whispered into my heart, God called me to do something I was sure I couldn't. Well, I couldn't, but God could. Can I have the next slide, please? As Jeremiah's life unfolded, he said a lot of hard things to his people, but it wasn't all doom and gloom. Right in the middle of the book, Jeremiah gives hope. He says, in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem that are desolate, without inhabitants, human or animals, there shall once more be heard the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the voice of those who sing as they bring thank offerings to the house of the Lord. The days are coming when I will raise up for David a righteous branch. So all is not lost. Grief is coming, but it won't last forever. God hasn't forsaken God's people even when things seem to be falling apart. When we take that step of faith, when God calls us to do something we're sure we can't do, but we respond with a yes anyway, that's putting our faith into action. Dr. Martin Luther King, one of the greatest modern-day prophets, talk about saying things people don't want to hear, that people will punish you for. That's prophecy. He said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. We can do these things not because we are great, but because of the greatness of God. Because before we were born, God knew what we were capable of, even when we don't. Thank goodness we worship a God who never asks us to walk alone, who trusts us with God's work, but never asks us to do it in our own strength. Thank goodness that we serve a God who is with us, even as we adult, as we change the kitty litter and wash the dishes, and as we stand with those who are silenced or oppressed. Thank goodness God is with us on trains and in hospitals, and when we are sure we are going to fail. Thank goodness we serve a God who asks us to go out into the world, but first reminds us who we are and whose we are, children of the Most High God. Amen.